Aaron, thanks so much for the time. Game week, I know nobody's happier about that fact than you.
Yeah, I'm ready for some real football. In fact, I'm kind of jonesing for South Carolina and Texas A&M on Thursday night. I think that will really make it feel like it's finally here, but certainly being in that interview room on Monday and the horde of media hanging on Coach Saban's every word was a nice little kickoff, but it's finally here.
You know, I did think it was pretty interesting. Game week brings a little bit different dynamic from what you guys have been dealing with Coach basically every other day or every third day since camp has gotten underway. But still, you can tell the challenge was there to ask questions in a different way, because you're almost to the point, aren't you, Aaron, just like Coach Saban himself and the rest of that staff, until they play, there's not much else you can ask and pursue until after we get a game under our belts.
That's exactly right. I mean, look, throughout fall camp, even to the spring to a certain extent, you're looking at big picture stuff, how a position group looks, how an individual player has progressed or regressed. The new players, particularly early in camp, the new freshmen that report. But by the time that end of camp, and you get into the game week, I mean, you've really pursued all of those lines of questioning. You've exhausted almost every avenue for new information for these rabid Alabama fans that can't get enough. So, you know, it's nice to be able to talk about game week and Nick Saban's connection to West Virginia and, you know, West Virginia's 3-3-5 stack defense and their spread offense. So to actually get some football questions relative to a game that's on the horizon pretty close coming up is nice, and you're not really having to spend a ton of time thinking of a question because, you know, as you mentioned, there's a lot of those questions have already been asked and answered, but we wouldn't be doing our job if we didn't ask something.
He's talking football, and he catches himself, and he reels it back in pretty quick. But I love when he allows himself to go outside of football for a minute, and you get a chance to see that the guy is normal, that he enjoys the same things that other people do, such as using baseball analogy when he's talking about the quarterback situation. A starting pitcher may not finish, and he's going specifics, you know, on who it is. And then, as you said, when he's reflecting on his time growing up in West Virginia, yeah, he mentions going to a Mountaineer football game as being a big deal, but when he talks about a specific moment, He's the kid listening to the radio talking about a basketball game. And you realize, again, this is a guy who does love sports. And while he's really proud and has fond memories of where he's from, boy, he brought it back real quick to the fact that he's the Alabama coach and now he's an Alabama fan.
Yeah, it was funny. He kind of went on that West Virginia memory, trip down memory lane, and then I think caught himself and didn't want to.
You can almost hear John Denver playing in the background, couldn't you, Aaron? Country yeah, Road, Take Me Home.
Yeah, and you could see him light up a little bit because it's something that obviously, and I think most people can relate to this, that you're proud of where you're from, that brings back good memories, thinking back to those times, and you can drift away from the mission at hand for just a second, and you can tell he really enjoys talking about his dad. And I know he's talked about his dad a lot, but how much his dad meant in his life and the things his dad did in that area for the youth. And just anytime he gets a chance to kind of to tell those stories, he really relishes it. And he did yesterday, but as you mentioned, quickly brought back around to football and quickly let even the most sarcastic Alabama fan know that, hey, I'm an Alabama fan now. But you can tell he really did enjoy being a Mountaineers fan as he was growing up in the mountains of West Virginia.
Aaron Suttles, beat writer covering Alabama athletics for the Tuscaloosa News and Tidesports.com, joins us here courtesy of the Bud Light Hotline presented by Green Beverage. All right, you had one of the tweets over the weekend, Monday's coming, or as we call it, or day, because the depth chart comes out. And it's usually, you know, in this case, Blake Sims or Jake Coker, but they were ready for you and everybody else, Aaron. I don't know if it was Jeff Purinton. I don't know if it was somebody else in athletic communications. I'm guessing it wasn't Saban trolling on Twitter. Somebody got a little clever and decided to go slash rather than or. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I did notice that, and yeah, maybe they just got tired of all of us thinking that we were hilarious and funny, making the same joke, and they had a little fun at our expense. But slash means the same thing, and I don't think anyone expected any different. If you thought that Nick Saban was going to name a starter on Monday, heck, we could get to Thursday to the Hey Coach radio show and still may not know what their plans are. And from Nick Saban's perspective, you know, they'll name it when there's something, a decision to be announced, they'll announce it. And whether they have internally or not, no one really knows except for that coaching staff. But publicly, it's two guys. And you mentioned earlier the baseball metaphor. I thought it was interesting. I think, I think most of us have assumed that both Jake and Blake are going to split time. But that's not necessarily the case. And thinking about it, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, let's say Blake goes out in the first series and just looks, spectacular. Are you going to pull him just because you had a script ahead of time that, okay, we're going to give this guy two series and the other guy two series? Well, sports aren't really fair. And I know we like to think that everything's fair in the world, but sports are like everything else, not fair. And sometimes a guy just wins the job. And if one guy really looks great, he may play all the game. You know, it may be a situation where they play so well, they're just going to build on it and let that guy continue to take snaps. But certainly I still expect both players to play. But that doesn't mean that Nick Saban wouldn't guarantee it. Nick Saban wouldn't even tip his hand toward a script. The closest thing we have is back to 2011 when Phillip Sims and A.J. McCarron were kind of battling for that, and they each got a quarter, I believe, or each got, a couple series on and then off. So that's, using history as our guide, I think that's a good indicator of where this may be headed, but it's not necessarily guaranteed because one of those guys could grab that job and run with it.
When they hand you the depth chart and everybody's eyes go to the quarterback slot, after that point, where'd you look next? What was next for you? And was there anything else that kind of jumped off the page at you, Aaron?
Yeah, really had a chance to study it. The first place I went was offensive line because I think that's what's going to make this offense go. They don't grab the headlines and they don't get the lion's share of attention, but that's where football's won, is on the line of scrimmage. So, seeing Dominic Jackson as the backup left tackle was interesting to me, given his lack of pass protection experience coming from the junior college where they ran the ball pretty much exclusively. You can tell they really want Leon Brown to get healthy to kind of grab that right guard position. So looking at the two deep on the offensive line was something I was interested in. The defensive line, obviously, they are so deep at that position. Just looking at that and how they intended to use each guy was interesting. A'shaun Robinson listed as a starter at nose guard, but that's only because they're playing what Saban calls a speedball team. When they get in the base 3-4, I think you'll see Brandon Ivory out there. And then, the quarterback, I think that's gotten a lot of attention. Seeing a guy like Maurice Smith as the backup to Bradley Silva at left corner. And then the linebacker, co-starters listed at Mike linebacker, Trey DePriest and Reuben Foster. I think it's pretty clear at this point that Trey's still not 100% in terms of, he may be nothing structurally wrong with his knee, but he's not in game condition. And Nick Saban said multiple times he's going to have to play his way into shape, and they've even considered the possibility, and probably will at this point, rotating their middle linebacker until, because he mentioned those first four games of the season, they're playing hurry up, no huddle type offenses, spread attacks, where it's going to put a lot of stress on Trey running sideline to sideline, and he's going to have to get in shape quick. So seeing Reuben behind him was interesting, but it's like Christmas, Chris. When we get that list and we can actually, you start talking about these guys in not abstract ways, but actually concrete, this is where they are for the game. It really is like Christmas morning to me and tearing into a bunch of presents, just being able to study it all and to think about what went into each decision.
And look, Coach Saban said one of the reasons that he hates giving the list out is because we take that and we put it as though it's exact. This guy is starting here. This is going to happen this way. And the reality is, as he put it, depending on what the situation in the game is at the time, it may not look like that, specifically in the secondary. Another example to me comes with the tight end slot. Brian Vogler, maybe the guy, if it's a run situation, if it's pass, O.J. Howard more than likely is the guy. But he did kind of catch himself on that, or after he said it, kind of came back with and said, but I understand that. It's as if, look, he gets the fact we need this in the media. Even as fans, we need this for the reasons you were just talking about. But I think there is maybe a better understanding from our side of things with it now that, hey, this is the way he does it. There are multiple looks. It's a starting point. It's not a finishing point.
Yeah, I think in terms with the media, with fans, we tend to view it as we get this list and it's carved, it's chiseled into stone, and it won't change. Well, that's just it's foolish. I mean, everything changes in life. You know, things, injuries, and the guys that aren't as experienced now will be more experienced as they get into the season and get some game action under their belt. And you really have to view it. The thing that hurts that perception is we get one depth chart for the season. If they gave a depth chart before every game, I don't think as much would be made about it. There would be an understanding that this is the depth chart for this game. But for, you know, your depth chart varies depending on your competition. You know, playing West Virginia on defense is entirely different from playing LSU on defense. So
right.
That changes how you use your personnel is different. And we tend also to view players as that, well, by the time of the first game, that's the player they're going to be for the year. And that's just not true. Players get better throughout the course of the year. Some players, due to injuries, regress throughout the course of the year. I think the coaches have identified the 40, 50 guys that they'll coach this year that have a chance to make a difference on the field. But just because a guy is a starter doesn't mean that the guys behind him don't have a chance to start. I mean, players get better. You get better in your job every day. You get better, you get worse, is the same. So we tend to view this as that, okay, this is the point of delineation, the cutoff point, that whatever's been said at this exact moment is gospel going forward, and that's just not the case. You have to realize that things adjust. Players get better, players get worse, competition changes, and that's really the way you need to view the depth chart and how it could change throughout the course of the season.
Last thing, and I'll let you run. We've talked about Thursday night. How tempted are you to head to Atlanta early and see Ole Miss and Boise in person, or are you like typical fan, you'd much prefer to just sit there in front of the TV and check out all three games that we'll have on Saturday? Thursday.
Yeah, because I rarely get to sit on my couch and watch it, I'm ready to pull up some TVs, have South Carolina and Texas A&M and Boise and Ole Miss going. I'm really just looking forward to being a fan for the night, studying those teams, seeing what kind of teams they're going to have. Because, you know, South Carolina is predicted to win the East, you know, with Georgia. They're one of the favorites, and Ole Miss is a team that's really been talked about to be a dark horse contender in the West. So I'm really just looking for some football and just sitting home, in the comfort of my home, and watching some college football.